Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Monday morning. It's March 16th. What have we got here? 31 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Under cloudy skies, we've got 32 degrees in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Monday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back as we go throughout this week. It is going to be a historic week when it comes to the weather here across the Beehive State and most of the western half of the country. Now, today, we'll have a mixture of clouds, especially earlier today, with some sunshine developing, especially for this afternoon. Temperatures will warm up a little bit above average as we'll climb to near 50 in Park City. We'll see those highs in the upper 50s in the Heber Valley. As we move towards your Tuesday, look for lots of sunshine. Temperatures definitely on the warming track. In. How about high temperatures, believe it or not, in the low 60s for us in Park City? We'll see those highs approaching 70 degrees in the Heber Valley. But just wait, it gets even warmer. That's right, we're talking about a massive ridge of high pressure settling in as we get towards the middle and latter half of the week. This will bring some all-time record high temperatures, not just for the day, but also for the month of March across most of the western half of the country. By the time we get towards your Wednesday, high temperatures will be around 70 degrees for us in Park City. Wow, with lots of sunshine, should be absolutely beautiful, but say goodbye to that snowpack. In the Heber Valley, we're looking at those temperatures climbing into the mid to upper 70s for highs. Wow, again, for the month of March. But again, it gets even warmer as we get towards your Thursday. Lots of sunshine expected. How about mid-70s for us in Park City? We're talking record heat, folks. This is something we have just not seen before in the month of March. As we get towards the Heber Valley, temperatures will likely climb into the low 80s for highs. As we get towards your Friday, it stays very warm with those highs in the mid-70s in Park City, highs in the low 80s in the Heber Valley. Again, these are record high temperatures for the day, but they're also all-time record high temperatures for the month of March. Heading into the weekend, we'll start to cool it down Saturday with highs in the low 70s in Park City and highs in the upper 70s in the Heber Valley. We'll be back to highs in the 60s in Park City with highs in the low 70s in the Heber Valley by Sunday, and it looks to remain dry for the next 6 to 10 days. That's your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back on ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
And with the look of what those record high temperatures mean in the backcountry, on the phone with us, we've got Greg from the Utah Avalanche Center. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. You know, these record high temperatures that we're expecting to begin in a few days seems to be in line with what we've been seeing all winter long. It's just been an unusually warm winter, unusually dry. It's evident when you look in the hills. We're losing our snowpack rapidly. But we do have snow. There is still snow at the mid and upper elevations, particularly on northerly facing slopes. There's 5 to 6 feet of snow there, even greater amounts in some places. So there is a snowpack, and it's on those northerly aspects, it's going to be quite a shock to the snowpack when it takes on those warm temperatures. So right now, the snowpack is pretty much frozen solid. We have cold temperatures, but it's really windy up high. Gusts to near 80 miles an hour at 11,000 feet. So I'm expecting for today that the snowpack is going to stay frozen. It may soften in some areas, but we've got relatively cool temperatures, winds, and cloud cover. I think it's going to keep the snowpack frozen today, but we're going to begin to see it warm up tomorrow. And then, yeah, you just heard the weather forecast coming up. It's going to be a spike in temperatures, and snow does not like rapid change. So for today, we're going with a low avalanche danger. We may begin to creep up to moderate tomorrow with wet avalanches possible, but we certainly will be seeing a rising avalanche danger this week. I would not be surprised if we have a high danger by Thursday or Friday of wet snow avalanches. So yeah, for now, enjoy the cool temperatures. and there is, there is some snow out there. You can travel around, but things are definitely going to be changing by later this week.
Yeah, Utah Avalanche Center usually makes it until about April. I mean, any idea when things may wrap up for the season, given what we're seeing?
That's a really good question. We usually go till the middle of April, and I think some regions of the state may shut down before then. But certainly the Uintas have there's a pretty decent snowpack in the Uintas. So we're expecting the Uintas to go through mid-April. Also in the Salt Lake Mountains, a little tricky in some of the other areas where just access, for example, in the Logan Mountains, access just, even though there'll be snow up high, access will be limited. And that's possible in the Ogden and Provo Mountains as well. So I'm expecting we'll be going through mid-April, our usual mid-April, for the Salt Lake Mountains and the Uintas. We'll wait and see. I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I do think we have at least one big storm ahead of us. So hopefully we'll be able to talk about snowfall coming up before the end of the season.
Hope so. Okay. Well, we see lots of snow, it seems like, the day the resorts close. So, yeah.
That has happened before, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to go on a limb. We're going to have at least one big storm before the end of the season.
Okay. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Stay tuned. In just a few minutes, we'll be checking in with Park City Fire Chief Pete Emery, along with Assistant Park City Fire Chief Ashley Lewis, Youth Sports Alliance Executive Director Emily Fisher, joined by Programs Director Heather Sims with an update on some of the youth sports programs they've got running. And finally in the hour, from the Stuyvesant Basin Recreation District, Director Robert Parrish with a monthly update. Closing statements begin today in the murder trial of a Camas area mom accused of killing her husband with fentanyl. Corey Richens has pleaded not guilty to charges of aggravated and attempted murder, forgery, and two counts of insurance fraud. Over the past 3 weeks, Summit County prosecutors put 42 witnesses on the stand to build their case. Richens' attorney did not mount a defense. Monday, the sides will use the evidence to persuade the jury that Richens did or did not fatally poison her husband. Prosecutors believe her motive was partly financial and presented evidence about her mounting debt in her realty business. The defense says prosecutors cannot prove how Richens would have given fentanyl to her husband. They're expected to ask the jury to find her not guilty. Court is scheduled to begin this morning starting at 8:30. In the studio now with an update from Park City Fire District, I have Chief Pete Emery along with Assistant Chief Ashley Lewis. Good morning to both of you. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, so I know we also have an Assistant Chief, Sean Bridley. How many Assistant Chiefs do we have?
We're up to two right now.
Okay.
So two. So when I was, Chief Sinetti was here, we were a Deputy Chief model at that moment, so just myself at that time. And just as the district's grown, We've moved to two assistant chiefs, so just to spread that workload over two people versus one.
Okay, so we call it assistant chief as opposed to deputy chief?
Yep.
All right, well, great. So on Saturday, crews responded to a bomb threat at the historic Egyptian Theater. Can either of you tell us more about how the fire district was involved in that response?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, the last thing we want to do as an organization is shut down Main Street. You know, we understand that's a huge part. You know, Main Street is arguably the heart. It is the heart of Park City. So the last thing we want to do is put that pressure on businesses and the visitors. But with working with Park City PD, they felt they felt it rose to the level of evacuation, and so we coordinated with Park City PD. And as you saw, we had it shut down pretty much from the post office up to the top of Main, and just the geography of Main Street. We also had to shut down for traffic the whole thing. So, but a huge shout out to Park City PD. You know, one of the advantages we were able to open up so quickly is they have now Bruno, the bomb dog. And we were able to get Bruno in really quickly, which was able to clear that building out, you know, as, I think in under 2 hours. So huge kudos to Park CPD and Chief Wade Carpenter.
All right. So you were just assisting on the call then. It's the police department's territory, jurisdiction?
I think it's, we're working together. I mean, we always have. We have a good relationship there. But they felt it was credible. And so, you know, we obviously start blocking traffic. We did have hazmat crews going through that building as well with the bomb dog, just to make sure with all our sensors, just as a safety check as well.
Yeah, so is that really what you do? You send somebody in? I mean, if there was a bomb and it was going to detonate, I mean, why put somebody at risk?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think what we're always worried about is dirty bombs, radiology, and stuff that we have detectors for that can pick that up. And so There is always that outlier risk for a few things we do. We sent really minimal staff in with the police department, but it's part of the job.
Yeah, I remember during the Olympics, something similar with, and we sent a robot in. Do these still exist? Maybe that's a better idea.
Yeah, I think it depends on the situation. If they have an actual device, I think that it changes things up, but we're a little out of my wheelhouse here.
Yeah.
Some of the teams in Salt Lake have those specialized pieces of equipment.
Right, and I think that's where we got it from, yeah. And I guess how do you know how far to evacuate? Because I know KPCW didn't get evacuated.
Yeah, and again, we don't know if there is a bomb, how big is the bomb? So we're really making an educated guess, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I guess if there someone was really bombing a building, would they call and tell you about it?
But that's a great question.
If it comes in, you're not going to not go just because, somebody's calling Wolf again.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's hard, and I understand where people in the public might be going, well, why are you doing anything? We know it's not real, and that's, again, where we really work closely with law enforcement and try and verify and see what's the best move.
Yeah, and certainly incidents like this can cause anxiety in the community. So how do you first responders train for threats involving potential explosives or, again, hazardous materials?
Yeah, that's a good question. So here at Park City Fire, I can speak for the fire department. We have a hazmat team. So we have 6 personnel on duty every day that are trained at a hazmat tech level. And they have all this training, through dirty bombs, radiology, germ warfare to that extent. So that's how we prepare. And then again, with that relationship with Park City and the Sheriff's Office.
Yeah, and you own kind of all of that equipment for the safety of your...
Yeah, we own all that equipment. If you want to remember back to E.T., where those guys are in those suits, we have the more modern version of that. But, yeah, it's something that we have a fair amount of hazmat calls within this jurisdiction, especially with the amount of equipment that moves down I-80. So it's something that we train on a lot, and we also actually execute quite a fair amount, too.
All right. Fire crews also responded to the fire at Chimayo on Main Street a few weeks ago. What do we know at this point? What happened there? Ashley?
I spoke with Fire Chief Mike Owens the other day, and he had mentioned that it's still under investigation. Sounds like it started in the kitchen somewhere and spread into the roof from there.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about the challenges responding to a restaurant fire in a busy commercial area? I mean, I guess we were lucky in the sense that it was an early morning fire and not on a Saturday night during Sundance. I mean, that would have been a whole different story, I'm guessing.
You're exactly right. I mean, time of day, there was no one really to move around, evacuate, and get out of the way. So we were able to make entry quickly, identify where the problem was, and start putting resources to putting that fire out. I will go back to the bomb threat on Saturday. The community and the people on Main Street were very patient with us, very understanding. This disrupts businesses, people that are trying to enjoy their afternoon. And, some people had cars parked right in front of the Egyptian, and how do you get out? How do I get my coat out of my vehicle? And just want to really thank the community for their patience and understanding as we work through that.
Okay, they went inside somewhere. They couldn't. I mean, if they don't have a coat, they can go find a warm place, the library, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Any lessons or reminders maybe restaurant owners or employees should take away from the Chimayo fire about fire prevention and safety?
I don't know what caused it. I do know that there's, we have a lot of our prevention bureau led by Fire Marshal Mike Owens. I think everyone's doing their best, so I don't... Please keep a fire extinguisher both in your businesses and, more importantly, at home. Don't forget, there's 2 sides here. Everyone has a kitchen at home, so that's probably the quickest one, is have a fire extinguisher and escape plan for your family.
All right, so as we have been lamenting for months, winter has been unusually dry. How concerned are you about what this could mean for the upcoming wildfire season?
Yeah, I'm concerned. Part of the issue is, what we're seeing here is probably, as I'm sitting here looking outside at Brown, is we're going to have an earlier spring. which what that means is in early spring, we're going to have more growth early, and then the possibility of obviously an earlier fire season. We're lucky up here in Park City in Summit County, where usually the fire season's later in the year if you compare us to Salt Lake City. But as you know, these warmer seasons go, they're going to be earlier here as well. That being said, again, as Chief Lewis said, we have a really good relationship with the public. People, please call us if you see smoke. Please be careful around fires that you have. And then we are looking at another firework and possible fire ban coming into this year.
Yeah, I know Wasatch County already talking about that. And I'm guessing if these dry conditions continue, how does that affect kind of the timing of the wildfire and firework season?
Yeah, last year we started ours in April, or May. Last year we started in May, and we're currently looking at working with Park City Municipal and Summit County, and probably starting in April this year, so a month earlier.
Yeah, and this may be in a North Summit, but I recall, didn't we already have a brush fire earlier this year?
We did. We had a brush fire about 2 weeks ago. It may have been. I could be a little bit off, but yeah, it was within the last month. We had a brush fire in North Summit, and Park City Fire Units responded to that and helped them out. So it's here.
Yeah. We've had a couple of fires this winter, in quotes. It's been head scratchers where we haven't seen this type of behavior in a while. You probably allude to it, but just some friendly reminders to the public as you're looking at your home going into the spring. Make sure that you're blowing out dead leaves under the balcony or around the home. Make sure that there's no dry vegetation that's touching your home, and you're removing the brush and deadfall, 30 to 100 feet away from your home.
Yeah, never too early to do that, especially when we got, time to do it,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. Pete, can we talk a little bit just about some of the key issues that your Board of Trustees currently focused on?
Yeah, we certainly can. I think right now, as you've already mentioned, we're gearing up for the wildland season. Right now, Park City Fire, in April, mid-April, we turn on our wildland division. And so we'll have a Type 3, which is a wildland engine, that will be available for response locally and nationally. So that's a big component of this. As we already talked about, obviously, the fire ban, we've already been talking about that as well. Since you're giving me a slight angle on this, I'm going to throw another huge shout out to the members of the Park City Fire District. They participated in the Seattle Stair Climb, which raises money for cancer. Park City Fire raised about $20,000 through the community, and as well competed in a stair climb for 70 stories. We had 19 personnel there, and 250 teams participated, roughly 2,000 firefighters, and Park City Fire won the event. So a huge kudos to the staff. And again, we couldn't do that without the support of the community, and I'm just really proud of what they've done there too.
Okay, so what, they're fully dressed with all of their, 70 pounds of gear on them?
Exactly, fully dressed in their turnouts, SCBA on their back, and breathing it. So they went from the bottom to the top on air, and just a huge testament to what we have here in Park City.
Well, it just goes to show you that training at high altitude really makes a difference when you go down to sea level.
It really does. We're not sharing that advantage to everybody, but you're spot on.
Yeah. I mean, I guess what kind of preparation kind of goes into something? Are they just that fit? Yeah.
I think what goes into it is that we really have a motto up here where we're going to be the best. We train hard, and we're not training for the stair climb, but we're training for, just like you talked about, that fire we had at the restaurant last week, the wildland season coming up, so it just plays into our wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm. I guess beyond the competition, any other cause or charities that the fire district participates in?
You know, that's our big one. Obviously, as people bring it to us, but that's the big one that we really focus on. It's out of state. It doesn't affect us, on the... And it's a really, cancer is a huge issue for the fire service, and we've really gone behind that.
Well, just because of the elements they're exposed to, yeah?
Exactly.
Yeah. Do you still do the chili cook-off as well?
Yeah, that happens every, I think, fall. Mm. I think that happens down in Salt Lake. Last year it was held at the Real Salt Lake Soccer Stadium. And, teams from all over the Salt Lake Valley in Utah will bring their best chili recipe in, and people can come in and buy a coupon to test the chili and vote for who they think is the best, and that's always a great event and raise a lot of money for the burn camp.
Awesome. Yeah, that's chili season, the fall, of course. Yeah. And finally, I guess, Pete, any upcoming investments in staffing, station equipment, or things?
Our staffing levels are right where we want them. Our retention's great right now. I think as far as investment goes, we are continuing to look at moving Station 35. We're working with the county on that. That would be being relocated closer to Jeremy Ranch Elementary School. But that's probably going to be at least a 3 to 4 year process.
And that's basically moving across the highway, right? The Pine Brook is Station 35.
Correct. That would be moving across the freeway. And really what it does, and I feel confident we're going to get this through, is it really helps our response times. You know, it's right there at that entrance to the freeway. And so when we run heat maps and all that, and it really stretches that station's response better. So it's a really good move for the community across the board. And then it's the ongoing investment. You know, as we've talked about, fire engines take 4 years to arrive. So we have a 10-year plan for vehicles, and we literally have four apparatus currently sitting in a queue just so we make sure we have them when they get here. And that's another focus with the Olympics. You know, there's things we have to be doing today to be ready for the Olympics.
Yeah, so 4 years, I thought that was just kind of a pandemic deal, but it's persisted, huh?
Well, we were hoping it was a pandemic deal, and it went from 2 years to 3 years. We're now at four. So it's, you know, we're fortunate. We have a good game plan. It's not affecting us because we have that build out in front of us. But these smaller agencies, you know, they may not know what's coming at them, but that's where we're at.
Okay, anything else you want to mention?
No, thanks for having us.
No, thank you.
It's Park City Fire Chief Pete Emery along with Assistant Chief Ashley Lewis. Well, in studio now with an update from the Youth Sports Alliance, I have Executive Director Emily Fisher along with Programs Director Heather Sims. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
So, Emily, with the Paralympics now officially closed, we're going to have a parade here, huh?
Yes, we are so excited. Every 4 years, the Youth Sports Alliance puts together the Olympic and Paralympic Homecoming Parade. So, everybody, mark your calendars. That's April 3rd. The parade will start at 5 p.m. sharp. We will parade down Main Street, have some speeches from the stage, and then at 6 to 7 p.m. there will be an athlete autograph opportunity for the community to come out and welcome home all those different Olympians, and we'll have some live music, and it's my favorite event that we put on.
Yeah, so where's the stage going to be?
The stage is going to be right below... it's going to be on Lower Main, right below sort of Townleft Plaza, the bridge there.
We've done concerts before.
Exactly.
Are we talking that big or no?
Yeah, well, yes, within all of the regulations and permits. But yes, it will be a big stage. And last time we had nearly 60 athletes from different Olympics and Paralympics join the parade, along with athletes returning from the current Olympics. So that's sort of our goal again this year. And we're really excited.
Yeah, so where will the athletes be signing autographs?
So, yeah, Lower Main, between 7th and 9th, sort of where Silly Market is. So Upper Main will be closed for the parade and then reopen, and we'll have that Lower Main. We make a commemorative flag with a couple of different of our logos and sponsors, and we'll pass those out to all the along the parade route, and we'll have those at the autograph signing. So kids, families, fans can get autographs from their favorite athletes on those flags during that time.
All right. And athletes, not just in this games, but other winter sports athletes?
Yeah, you know, we actually invite any Olympian or Paralympian who's living in Utah to come participate in our parade. It's a super fun time just to celebrate our Olympic history here in the Wasatch Back. So we know from Milan Cortina medalists, we're still getting all of the RSVPs. As you can imagine, the athletes are a little tired and getting organized from their season. But we know Connor Curran, who's a gold medalist, mixed team aerials. He's also received support from the Stein Erickson YSA Opportunity Endowment. He will be there. Casey Dawson will be there, who's a silver medalist from 2022. 2026, bronze medalist, 2026. He's also a Stein Erickson scholarship recipient, and then Ashley Farquharson, so bronze medalist in women's luge from this year's games, and also get out and play alumni and Stein Erickson opportunity recipient. So, and then we also have some other really exciting confirmed athletes, Olympic medalists from previous games. So Grant Fisher, who's a Park City resident, bronze medalist from the 3,000 and 5,000 at the Paris Summer Olympics. Of course, local Eric Heiden, and then Kate Johnson, who's a silver medalist in women's rowing and current YSA board member, and Phoebe Mills, Olympic bronze medalist on the balance beam and current YSA board member as well.
Okay, so again, maybe 50, 60 athletes at
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. We should have, you know, probably over 60 Olympians and Paralympians. April 3rd, 5 p.m.
Okay. Let's see. Heather, YSA started offering its after-school programs in Salt Lake. How's that going?
Oh, that's been going great. We have expanded out into Salt Lake, and we go from ski resorts from Alpine District all the way in the south there, up to Ogden. We have multiplied our programs by quite a lot, and to support this expansion, we hired Camille Thompson. She's a program manager for the Wasatch Front, and she's building partnerships with schools and community organizations. This first 6 months of the school year, we recorded 515 total registrations across the schools. We provided 185 full scholarships and 20 half scholarships, meaning 40% of participating students actually received financial support to ensure that cost is not a barrier to participation. We've had some schools that have produced some high participation, including Monticello Elementary, that's had 100 registrations. And then Wallace Stegner has three campuses, and we've had 163 elementary participants and 38 middle school participants from there.
Yeah, so where does the money come to support Wasatch Front?
So what's been lovely is we've seen support for our programs to expand to the Wasatch Front. Our title sponsor, Kodiak, has stepped up to include the Wasatch Front in their title sponsorship. So we have some support from them, support from donors, different, businesses across the Wasatch Front have really been interested because they've seen the success we've had on the Wasatch Back and have pushed that support to the Wasatch Front. So it's been really great. We also have the Gaddis YSA after school endowment that we anticipate using to support transportation and scholarships as well.
Yeah, do you anticipate doing any kind of fundraising down there? Or?
Yeah, I think it's kind of the chicken or the egg, right? Do you start fundraising there and then begin programs, or do you begin programs and say, look at the success? We sort of knew that we had support from a donor for expansion and for operations, so used some of that seed money to start the programs, and now feel really great about going to local businesses on the Wasatch Front or Utah-wide businesses or foundations and say, you know, we have now expanded, we can show our success, will you support us? And we feel like that's a really strong position to be in.
Yeah, and Heather, I think you do this school by school, but how do you know which schools to choose, or are the programs open to anybody and parents would just need to get their kids to a program school?
Yes, so usually how we work is we work with the venues first, and then we see what schools would be willing to work at that time. Obviously, some of the times it's during the day, school day, not after school, especially with the ski resort. So our programs are open to anybody, but the key part of our programs is transportation. If we can get the bus to the school, get them all there at the same time, that makes a difference both to the kids that are participating and also the venue. But homeschoolers, we've had homeschoolers participate, and they just meet us there at the venue. But it is open to anybody.
Okay. Let's see. And then Camille, your Wasatch Front program manager, is she working out of Salt Lake or is she out of the Park City?
Yeah, so Camille had a past of working with the Davis School District. Mm-hmm. So she has an insight to how the school district works. And so we employed her last July. She's doing a phenomenal job at getting into the schools and getting those kids participating in our programs.
Okay, so what programs have you got underway now, and do you have any upcoming registration?
Oh, yes. So we go all the way to the end of May, and we've got some programs that still have registration starting in April. Our March programs have started. So we have mountain biking, rise boxing, athletic republic, e-bike safety, first aid, ice skating, and of course our big programs are in the spring and fall are our mountain biking. So that registration is open. You can register at ysausa.org. Get Out and Play is our 1st through 5th, and our Activate is 6th through 12th.
Okay. And also scholarships still available for those who may be interested.
Yes. So we have two different types of scholarships. We have a free and reduced lunch scholarship, which is basically a quarter of the price. And then if you have an annual salary of less than $120,000, that will give you a 50% discount code that you can use till the end of the year.
All right. And then this is also the time of year, Emily, when athletes are getting called into national competitions and you can help out as well there.
Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier when I was speaking about the Olympians, our Stein Erickson Opportunity Endowment, that is for athletes who train with one of our 7 member clubs, so Figure Skating Club of Park City, Park City Ski and Snowboard, Park City Ice Miners, Park City Speed Skating Club, Utah Olympic Park, Bobsled and Skeleton, Wasatch Luge, or Wasatch Freestyle. So these are all need-based scholarships. In the fall, we ask athletes to apply for what they anticipate their annual needs will be. So this is what I expect to do. These are the competitions I expect to go to. In the spring, we sort of have a second round of scholarships, but these are for competitions that they didn't anticipate qualifying for. So maybe they had a tremendous ski season. They're going to Junior Worlds, Junior Nationals, Regionals, something that they weren't expecting. So they can apply right now. Applications are due by March 30th, and then funds will be announced April 17th. So just talking about Milan Cortino, Ashley Farquharson, Casey Dawson, Matt Greiner, Kira Dosa, and Connor Curran all received funding in the past from the Stein Erickson scholarships to help them participate in postseason competitions. So you can see that this really is a key part of helping keep athletes in sport and getting them to those elite level competitions that without this funding they wouldn't be able to participate in.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
Yeah, I just want to say thank you to all the resorts and all the venues locally for giving us a great winter season despite the lack of snow. You know, we've had nearly 1,200 kids do the Learn to Ski program, so we're just really grateful.
Okay. YSA Executive Director Emily Fisher and Programs Director Heather Sims, thanks so much.
Thank you.
The Summit County Council has appointed 2 new members to the East and West Side Planning Commissions, also reappointing 3 others. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports that there is still one slot that's open.
Summit County has 2 planning commissions, one for each side of the county, and the terms of 3 members on both volunteer boards expired at the end of February. The County Council filled some of those vacancies March 4th. In the Snyderville Basin, Eric Sagerman and Spencer Young reapplied and were reappointed to full 3-year terms. McKenna Hawley's term had also expired, but she did not reapply. She'll be replaced by Delta pilot and Park City area resident of almost 3 decades, Peter Van Stee. He says one of the biggest macro challenges facing the basin is the influx of development applications and state legislation affecting those projects.
And then on the micro level, I guess it would just be how do you incorporate? There certainly is a need for housing and affordable housing. So how do you incorporate that into the community?
Van Stee also said during his interview he's volunteered in a number of different capacities before. He applied for the Basin Planning Commission years ago, but after a conversation with then-county manager Tom Fisher, ended up on the Public Art Advisory Board for 2 terms. Now he's a member of the Summit County Economic Development Advisory Board. That same day, council members interviewed and reappointed David Darcy to a second term on the Eastern Summit County Planning Commission. Camas Valley native Paul Weller of Weller Recreation was also appointed to the commission. He fills one of two vacancies left by commissioners Bill Wild and Marion Wheaton, who were term limited this year and could not reapply. Weller also has a history of volunteerism, serving on various power sports industry boards and the Wasatch Back Hospitals Community Board.
You know, one voice on a committee is just one voice. The ability to find middle ground is the challenge. And with the various committees that I've served on and actually operating and running businesses and having employees, there's always middle ground to be found.
With just Darcy and Weller joining the seven-member panel, there's still one vacancy.
I'm intrigued that we've only had a couple of people, myself and Paul Weller, apply for the Eastern, for this planning commission. And I'm wondering if it's just because it is a little bit of work. It is. And it will take some time to really dig in.
Both the Snyderville Basin and Eastern Summit County commissions make recommendations to the county council regarding land use decisions. This year, commissioners in the basin voted on the new Utah Olympic Park Development Agreement and the Junction Commons redevelopment. The big project facing their east side colleagues is new zoning proposed in Browns Canyon by developer Ivory Homes. All the new and returning appointees' terms expire February 28, 2029. Applications for all of Summit County's volunteer boards and positions can be found online. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
The Park City School District has proposed rerouting Park City High School buses to Lucky John Drive to increase safety. As KPCW's Christine Weller reports, Park City Planning Commissioners don't want to reroute traffic through a neighborhood.
Park City School District leaders want to provide a new exit point for Park City High School buses. The school's 18 buses currently exit the school by turning onto Kearns Boulevard or State Route 248 all at once. As there's no traffic light, the lead bus currently enters Kearns and temporarily blocks traffic to allow the others to merge onto the main roadway, 9 turn left and 9 turn right. The district is concerned about safety. The buses leave campus during peak traffic hours, and there are increasing interactions with frustrated drivers. There have also been multiple crashes in front of the school. So the district is proposing buses be rerouted to Lucky John Drive. Buses could then get to Monitor Drive and use the intersection to turn onto Kearns. To go ahead with the plan, the Park City Planning Commission would need to modify a conditional use permit so buses could use what is now an on-campus emergency lane. The commission reviewed the proposal Wednesday, but wasn't convinced rerouting would solve the problem. Commissioner Seth Beal worried there would still be safety issues. I actually think you just create different safety issues. So when I think of driving that section of Lucky John, that's where I see people on bikes coming from Park Meadows to school. You increase traffic on a road that already makes me nervous. Commissioner John Frontero agreed, saying he doesn't want to push buses into a neighborhood. He also said the reroute created more issues, especially because the buses turning onto Kearns is only a 5 to 10 minute problem that occurs about 4 times a week during the school year.
What's being proposed tonight, I find, does not make sense. We're sending people backwards away from 248 to take a left onto Lucky John's. Left turns are difficult. And then we're sending them to Monitor to, yes, take another left. Also a difficult turn.
The district noted the reroute would be a temporary solution. It wants to build a road connecting the high school to McPullen Elementary so buses could use the signal at Comstock Drive and SR 248 to enter the Kearns campus. The road is part of the unapproved Phase 3 of the district's athletics master plan. Frontero suggested working with the Utah Department of Transportation to potentially put a light at the exit from Park City High onto SR 248. However, the district said UDOT doesn't want to install a light there as it's too close to the Monitor Kearns intersection. At the commission's request, city staff will now study a Comstock Drive option and may approach UDOT again for a temporary light. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
On the phone with an update from the Snyderville Basin Recreation District, I have Director Robert Parrish. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you this fine Monday morning?
Doing just well, thank you. So sounds like the outdoor winter activities have all but wrapped up. No ice rink at Willow Creek, no snow on our trails. What's the trails crew been doing to keep busy?
Well, for the most part, during the winter, we really don't have a trails crew because a lot of our summer trail stuff is accomplished with seasonal and part-time workers. But, you know, there's a lot to do during the winter. We have several trail work contracts that are being worked on. So, you know, they keep up and they prepare for the next coming season. So they've been busy this winter putting a couple of contracts in place and just putting in work plans for what they're going to do this year. We have a connector that's going in on the Princess Di Trail. We have some work that's going in at the East Canyon Trailhead, where we have to move the restroom facility that's there and kind of reconfigure the trailhead. And then the other thing that's been keeping them busy is run amok and a few of other trails. Because we haven't had the deep freeze and a lot of the snow, we've had a lot of muddy conditions when we do get the light snow. So monitoring trail conditions and making sure that we have appropriate and timely closures in place so we don't see trail damage and trail degradation during what would have been basically an early season has really kind of kept them busy.
Yeah.
So I know that we currently have a couple of closures at run amok right now. We're doing some restoration and just trail maintenance so that the trails in run amok can be well used this spring and summer.
Yeah, so it is closed today and all day, and I guess it stays closed for what, a month? When do you know when it reopens?
I'd have to check the calendar, check the crews, but yeah, it's about a month. We've got some work to do in there, and really it's also to help it dry out, and then we've got other work to do in there. So while it may be inconvenient for some, just remind everybody that, you know, over 150 miles of trails in the basin system and a few other dog-friendly areas, take the opportunity to explore on another one of our great resources here within the district.
Yeah, you will allow dog owners to come help clean up. I think there are 3 days scheduled, and dogs are welcome. Do you have those dates?
Yeah, not in front of me, no. You check our website. We will make announcements on when we're having the cleanup days announced. So stay tuned to the announcement side of our website for the actual days once we have them planned and locked in on the calendar.
Okay. And people just show up? I mean, do you provide the bags and the shovels, or people need to bring their own equipment? Or?
No, I think we provide everything. Obviously, if you get a preferred piece of equipment, that's fine. But no, we have plenty of bags and shovels and other things to help our volunteers help us.
All right, the district's exploring a joint proposal with Columbus Pacific to develop the Klein Dolly parcel. Can you explain what that proposal involves and why the Rec District believes this partner is beneficial?
Well, the county already owns the parcel, and they're working with the developer for some housing and other things that in light commercial go in the area. And it would benefit not only us. I believe the Park City Fire District is also looking at a part of one of the county parcels there for a new fire station to serve the area, to serve the growth that's been over there. It's important in two ways. And we also have the property that's in Silver Creek Village that we're looking at basically doing a dual or joint development. The district has grown. The field house is overused, and you know, I'm consistently and constantly hearing, you know, that people are complaining that they have to wait a half an hour to get on a treadmill, and you know, it's well used, well loved, and it really is an anchor point for fitness and recreation in the district. But as the district's grown, we know that we have additional stuff that's coming to Kimball Junction, particularly with the Dakota Pacific development. The county's planning on putting some additional housing. So in the next few years, we're going to see an additional 1,000 units of residential housing going in Kimball Junction. So the plan is to look at the Klein Dolly parcel and the Silver Creek Village parcel as ways to put fitness and additional recreation activities at the east and west ends of the district, closer to areas where there is residences. The Jeremy Ranch in Pine Brook area there have a majority of the residents, but in looking at Silver Creek Village, there's a lot of new build houses going in there. There's things going in Promontory and other developments that are planned for East Basin. So we're really looking at putting what I would call neighborhood facilities that have a common anchor and a theme to the field house, fitness and health type exercises, exercise classes and yoga. And I think what we're looking at is focusing the Klein Dolly facility to be an aquatic center. I know a lot of our residents travel to Camas to use their aquatic center. So in our 2024 survey, 18 months of survey we did, that, you know, aquatics is something that's of interest. And then we're going to look at outdoor recreation and outdoor type of activities for the Silver Creek Village. Potentially a climbing gym indoors. We're going to use that as an anchor facility for our summer camp offerings. And then we're also, because there is a demand, looking at the Silver Creek Village area to build an additional indoor field. So the portion of the field house that's in Kimball Junction, we would build another indoor field for use for all of our residents as well as our organized sports to have a place to go inside during the winter.
Yeah. And I guess I question the aquatic facility across the highway from the Eckerd Hill Aquatic Facility. Why does that make sense?
Well, so the Eckerd Hill facility, and I've had conversations with the school district, their main focus is competition swimming. So when I talk about an aquatics facility for us, we would not be building a competition swimming pool. It would not be our focus to have competition events for swimming. This is really going to be an indoor fun aquatics facility for people of all ages and families. So it's not going to be competition swimming. We have an agreement with the school district, and we're looking at renewing that agreement at the end of this year, that type of activity, whether it be intense lap swimming or other types of competition swimming, would stay at the school district at Eckerd Hill. I believe they have plans to expand and add a few more lanes for that pool. So it wouldn't make sense for us to duplicate that. We're going to continue to have our shared use agreement with them on that pool for those type of activities. So we'd really look for the Klein Dolly property to be a more fun place for families, kids, and everybody just to come and enjoy being in the water year round.
All right. What's the timeline for evaluating the Klein Dolly proposal, and when might the public see more detailed plans?
They're going to start seeing more plans here soon. We will likely go for a bond initiative this fall. So we're going to start the process most likely next month to start having public open houses to discuss the needs, to go over the results from the survey that was compiled into the 2024 strategic plan, and really kind of lay out some conceptual designs for what the facility would be as far as programming and blocking for what's going to be offered there, to really get the public involved. And potentially we might even have a design competition, much like we did with the Wheels Park, to where we would invite public input as to what type of, structures, facilities, what they would like to see their aquatic center look like, what they would want it to have before we actually go to design. But the intent would be we will have some public open hearings, we'll have some open houses, and then we have to have everything to county council by August if we plan on going for a bond this fall.
Okay,
November ballot.
So what's the ballpark amount of that bond, given you've got two facilities at Klein Dolly and Silver Creek Village to fund?
It's difficult to say right now because we really are thinking about this strategically. I don't want to go, I'm not going to say I'm going to go out for a huge bond to build everything. With our impact fees, other fees, and then the regular tax base, what we're working with the designers is programming the space to where we can go for a bond for an anchor facility, basically get the basic building constructed, and then using other fund sources over a couple of years or even during the project to phase it to where we're not relying 100% on bond money to build everything, that we do have a phased plan to build it out. And it also depends upon coordinating with the developers as to what they're going to build and when, because I don't want to be competing for space basically be in conflict with the developer building houses because we're trying to build other things. So knowing that, it is a confined space, particularly at Klein Dolly, at Silver Creek Village, we have a little bit more space, but I really want to do and take a thoughtful plan to where this is a phased development, and it's worked in conjunction with what the developer and what the county is going to have going on over there. So we build it out and it makes sense.
Okay, I guess, that sounds like probably the top of the list for the work plan for 2026. What are some of the other priorities for the district this year?
So the board priorities and some of my priorities, I've done a couple of interviews. Financial transparency is important to us. We just received responses to a couple RFPs. We're going to be looking at some new accounting software, some asset management software. We're about ready to conduct a facilities condition assessment. We've hired a third-party contractor to come in and take a look at all of our buildings and really assess our deferred maintenance and the condition of the buildings so we can have a better idea and plan for things like roof replacements, exterior painting, and just really how we're caring for the building. Our buildings are in good shape, but we really haven't had a good third-party audit done on that in a while. So it's time to bring somebody else from the outside to take a look at it and give us some advice as to what we need to do for deferred maintenance. Some other priorities for the board are, you know, along with the financial transparency, coming up with a deferred maintenance plan. So with that facilities audit, we're also going to get a 5 to 10 year capital investment plan that'll lay out some projects that we need to do to keep our facilities in top running condition without incurring a lot of deferred maintenance.
Okay, I'm about out of time, but we've got summer camp and swim lesson information live online. I don't think registration begins for another bit or so.
Yeah, we've got a couple more weeks before it goes live. Staff is working on finalizing the costs and schedules, and we know we're working on arranging for transportation contracts for buses to get kids in around the district. So just be looking for information to be posted on the website.
Okay. Robert, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you very much.
Robert Parrish is the executive director of the Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District.